Hi there. Welcome to Finding Space with Alex Tyson, the show that celebrates the everyday legends who put in the hard work to become who they want to be and live the life they want to live. For people who understand that when we practice compassion and find wisdom within ourselves, we find success and happiness. Join me in hearing amazing stories from everyday individuals who have found incredible personal and professional growth through varied and, at times, wild methods of self-improvement and self-responsibility. And through their unique perspectives and work, have gone on to better the lives of those around them. From nurturing health to growing your wealth, or enjoying the present to crafting your future, no aspect of life is off topic. And hey guys, just a quick note that we recorded this podcast before we rebranded our company from iHealth Saunas to Found Space. So if you hear any references of iHealth Saunas, that's why. G'day everyone, and welcome to the Sweat It Out Show. Question for you. What classes did you attend in the last year of high school? Mathematics, physical education, English, music, maybe drama? What about the class on how to easily and successfully build wealth? Yeah, that wasn't a class, was it? Did you attend the class on how to maximize your tax return or the capital investment strategy class? I didn't think so. In fact, talking about money, let alone learning about how to build money, is a conversation that isn't had as often as I believe it needs to be, similar to the last episode on sex. And so we can be left to figure out money by ourselves, only working with the influence we either model from our parents or our friends, oftentimes not the best people to be taking money advice from. Money isn't everything in life. Having money does make more choices available to you. Having a sole purpose to earn money will lead to discontent. Having an abundance of money can lead to amazing life experiences. Struggling to earn enough money to support a family is challenging. Having so much money that your family doesn't learn the value in money also provides challenges. There are many sides to the coin, pun absolutely intended. And building wealth stems from a fundamental belief within ourselves. Do you wish that you will earn $150,000 next year? Or will you earn $150,000 next year? Finish this sentence and you will gain some insight into your beliefs around money. Ready? Money is... Perhaps after today's interview, your answer to that question may change. You see, today I'm talking with Ben Walker. Ben Walker is the founder and CEO of Inspire, life-changing accountants, based out of Brisbane, Australia. Ben has a fascination in helping people's money work for them. In today's episode, we talk about the three main areas to focus on when building wealth, and we deep dive into each area to share with you the simplicity with which you can get clear on where your money is going, how to shift your focus on money and start growing your money, what safeguards to put in place, and areas to consider investing to achieve higher levels of wealth in your life, so ultimately you no longer have that feeling of not knowing what you're doing with your finances. A feeling we've all felt at one point or another. Feeling in control of your money reduces stress. We all know the impact stress has on our health. This episode of Finding Space with Alex Tyson is brought to you by Found Space. Make your home a place of wellness to live a long and healthy life. Visit foundspace.com.au for more information. And so to today's interview, I give you Ben Walker. Ben, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It is an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Alex.
Although I should really say thank you for having me here because we're in your podcast studio.
That's it. I appreciate you driving down from the sunny coast.
Yeah, I mean, it's always nicer to do these conversations in person than through the computer screen. And plus, your setup's pretty epic. So it's a real treat to be here. Thank you, mate.
No worries.
Today's really exciting for me because usually, certainly in the past, conversations on Sweat It Out have generally been health focused, but today we're really branching out a little bit and talking about something which actually plays just as an important role in our overall health, and that is our financial state and our wealth and how we handle and I guess pursue building money and wealth in our life. And certainly when we don't have plenty of money or it's tight or things aren't going well, it has an impact in our health.
Yep.
It has an impact in our immune system and our overall well-being, our sex drive. So it is critically important. And since I've gotten to know you, you've been a really good influence in how I handle my finances and things. And so I'm really excited to have you on, mate.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Before we start or to get into it, you've got a really kick-ass accountant firm, accountant business. I'm not sure what you guys call yourself exactly, but I guess it was the first time that I'd ever been inspired by someone doing what you do. And I'm curious to learn a bit more about that. Like, obviously accounting and helping people with this stuff sets your soul on fire. How did you kind of get into it, and what is it about doing the work that you do that inspires you so much?
Yeah, no, really, really good question. And it really starts right at, how I actually got into accounting was I headed towards the business subjects and when we can kind of choose what we did at school. My grandfather ran a business, dad ran a business, and I just was kind of fascinated with it. So anyway, did all the businessy, law and accounting subjects, and accounting was quite easy for me. And yeah, I ended up getting a job in a pretty big accounting firm and seeing from it, like the grind, so to speak, that you get there at the big corporate, in corporate world, and ended up shifting over to a suburban accounting firm. And the significance of that was I started to actually see clients come in, and it was almost like when they arrived, they looked stressed, they looked like worried or that sort of thing. And then I used to go to meetings with the guy I worked for, and as he explained stuff, you can kind of see things click in their mind. Like, oh, that's why that does, and that makes sense over there. And actually, it's not really a big problem. So, and then on the way out, they just didn't look anywhere near as stressed. So you could see an almost instant effect you could have on people where you kind of solve money problems for them. And that might sound super vague, but there's so many detailed levels underneath that of, you know, it's not just a tax return; it's how we put it together and how we advise a client, that all makes a super, super big difference in their world.
Yeah, I love that. I resonate with that story too. I remember growing up in the family business, and either dad would come home from the accountants and yep. like the rest of his week would be ruined because, I don't know, found out something he didn't know or just the energy prior to him going there and going there with him. And it was a similar thing. He would go there and there'd be so much that he wasn't sure about. And then he'd come out being like, oh, I understand that now. And there's kind of a relief there.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think for most people, I mean, there certainly isn't a class at school on like, hey, this is how you like do a tax return or.
Not at all, yeah.
You know, this is how to understand money and how to save money and make money work for you.
Or just do a budget, like just a simple household budget. There's nothing.
Yeah. How do we get that into schools? I feel like it's important.
No, it is definitely very important to start that. And yeah, the earlier you start that sort of stuff, the better the outcome as you get older.
Yeah, absolutely. So today we're going to cover a bit of a framework for everyone listening. You probably need a pen and paper, I feel like, to maybe write some stuff down, unless you're very good in your mind. Yeah, it could go about it with a bit of a workshop style. For those of you watching, well, it might be a little bit more interactive. But yeah, what are we going to talk about today? We're going into a few things, right?
Yeah, no, that's it. And I guess one of the things I've become more and more passionate about as I've solved some of this stuff in my own life, but we've helped clients in the past few years with is actually less about accounting stuff and more about helping them grow their personal wealth or their family's wealth. You know, one of the problems I see too often from like a tax accounting perspective or, you know, helping a business with their numbers is often everything just gets reinvested back into the business and they don't put much aside for super or they don't put enough. They're not investing outside their business, and that can actually lead to huge problems if you know, your business is only one asset. So your sole asset or one of the key ones. So yeah, I've just gotten more and more passionate where I've seen the power in this stuff over the last few years. So yeah, I'd love to talk about what we call wealth for life.
Yeah.
Which, yeah.
Cool. Let's get into it. Where do we start?
Yeah, cool. Well, I guess wealth for life I kind of consider is like a 9-step process for clients. And that kind of sounds a bit mechanical, but when I started to put together the key parts of stuff that I got sorted, a few years ago now, and we can kind of really help make a change with our clients, it came down to kind of 9 key things. And just going through them one by one is the first one is vision, like actually having some sort of a list of goals or something you want to do with your life. Because after that point, like if you don't have that, then like you can't go to an advisor and say, help me achieve that when you haven't worked out what you want to achieve. Mm-hmm. So yeah, kind of step one is having that vision for you and your family. And, you know, there's a few different frameworks for that. The one we kind of use is a bucket list, which kind of divides your life up into a few different sections and also timelines as well.
Mm.
So, yeah, and once we know that, we know what we're working towards.
Mm.
The second step is living within your means. So, you know, a mistake I made is, you know, when money comes into your personal bank account, that money or more goes out, if that's even possible. So, yeah, it's just making sure that your living expenses is less than what you're earning. Otherwise, you've got a very big problem with wealth creation. In fact, you're going to be going backwards, not forwards. So, yeah, it's almost doing an audit on what your living expenses are. You know, can you trim back any, you know, any excess or like, you know, an example I use is if you get Uber Eats three times a night, sorry, that'd be intense, three times a week, can you drop that back to once a week? And you might save, depending on the family, you know, 70 or 100 bucks a week just there. You know, do you need five different TV subscriptions or can you drop it down to two? And, you know, we don't want to focus on, you know, saving every single dollar everywhere. Like it's bang for buck stuff that I want to focus on. But yeah, if you can achieve the same lifestyle that just costs a little bit less, then that's what we're wanting to achieve in that step there.
Mm.
Cool. That's number two. Number three, financial freedom. So once we know what we spend and where we want to go, we also want to be able to work out when we will be, in a sense, financially free, be able to live our lifestyle that we want and target an amount of investments that we need to provide for that lifestyle.
Mm.
With the goal being able to never having to, you might want to work again, but never having to work again to provide for your lifestyle.
Mm.
And that's a pretty cool position to be in.
Yeah, I think already I'm coming back to the importance of that first step,
yeah,
the vision.
Yep.
Right? Because I talk about purpose so much on this podcast, people are probably sick of me talking about it, but it's so important because if you don't have that, well, what are you doing anything for? Because you don't know what you're striving for. How can you make any decisions?
Yeah.
Right? Do I want to retire and have, you know, multiple properties and this and that, or do I just want to have it real simple and have some cash in the bank? Or, you know, knowing those things I think is really important.
Yeah.
And it's going to help answer all of these other steps.
Yeah.
Once you know what that vision is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's kind of one of the first questions I ask clients. Like I caught up with someone the other week and he was telling me about some stuff he wanted sorting out in the business. And then I was like, cool. Well, once we get that sorted, like, where do you want to go? What do you want to do? And he's like, oh, I'd love a property in, you know, in Queenstown and one overseas and another country and, you know, one down northern New South Wales. And it's so important that you understand, as an advisor, that you understand that so that you can actually put things in place to help them. That's where the real power of this stuff comes in. So.
Yeah. And I think also you would probably experience that when you have those conversations with people, it almost like frees them up, like that question, like, okay, yeah, so then what happens after, you know, you sell the business, for example, or what's next? And then I imagine like the glass ceiling in their mind goes and they think, oh, wow, well, actually, well, I'd like to have this and this and this, you know, and then you can really start to create something and work for something.
Mm.
That to me is really exciting. There's so much belief work around that too, because people perhaps believe, oh, I'm too old to be able to do that, or there's not enough time, and it's like, is that just a bit of head trash that you got going on? It probably is possible for you to have those multiple properties in different countries or whatever it is that gets you going.
Yeah, for sure. That's it.
Mm.
Yeah, the first thing is working that out.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Mm.
And so what's number four?
Yeah, so so those first three actually what I call like the foundational things. Like, like that's the first layer. You know, where are we going? Do a bit of a stock take on what's going out, and then in terms of your expenses, and then that third one there is having a like an actual dollar figure to aim for, and that can be kind of stage one or goal one from a financial, call it net worth perspective. But then we need structures in place because a couple of things I'll share will make sense as we go, but Number four is having a backup plan. So not everything goes to plan. One of the pieces in that backup plan is having insurances in place. So in Australia, you can get insured for things like, you know, if you pass away unexpectedly, if you get illness, if you can't work for a certain period of time, there's different insurances that you can have in place that protect financially against that. And a couple of situations I've seen is, when you've got, let's say, a young family and the main income earner passes away unexpectedly, but the family's got a whole heap of debt. You don't want, you know, massive shifts in lifestyle for the remaining family to have to, you know, go and pay out debt or sell the family home and, a young mum with a couple of kids having to go back to work full time to put food on the table. And yeah, it's just situations you want to avoid. Look into whether you can have a backup plan in the form of insurances. So yeah, and that's a relatively easy thing to put in place. And for most people, inexpensive when you think of the ramifications of not having it in place and something bad happening.
And is the, I'm sure we'll get into it a bit later, but is the general consensus there to ensure so you cover off the debt that you do have?
Yeah. So a couple of things that I've used to work out my own insurance sort of needs is pay out any non-investment debt. So the home you live in, any other personal debt, maybe even business debt, unless you've got a very liquid business that you could just, or you people who are left over can sell for you and pay out that debt. But if it's going to be difficult for them to do that, you want to add that in, like your business debt in there. And then some for the family, I kind of consider. So, how much in dollars would you need to provide for, you know, let's say in my case, my wife and two kids. So you add that and make sure you've got instructions to wisely invest that. So, and then that should cover them for life. So that's a great backup plan in my opinion, where if you died or you had a major accident, then the people you love won't just be left stranded. They're set up. So yeah.
That's a good backup plan.
Yes.
I like it. And what's after the backup plan?
Yep. So the next one there is kind of a little bit morbid topic as well, but leaving your legacy. So, you know, they say that the only two certainties in life is death and taxes. So we want to make sure when we pass away, you've got an estate plan in place that, again, you know, makes sense for your situation. So a couple of key documents or things you might want to do there is definitely have a will to work out where your personal assets go. Mm. If you're a business owner, you do need a little bit more sort of advice around that, because you might have companies or trusts and the control of those is the key when you pass away. How does that pass to your next generation or the people that you leave behind? And then also having a document called a power of attorney when you may not be dead yet, but you still need other people to make decisions from a medical or a financial perspective. So yeah, again, I've seen situations where people haven't had their documentation in place, or it hasn't been reviewed when the person's wealth had changed or their structures had changed. So and it's a bit of a nightmare for the family trying to help with this stuff when they don't have the correct documents in place. So yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, you just hear so many horror stories about people who didn't have their will sorted or yep. No power of attorney, whatever. It's just like, oh, just kind of makes you cringe sometimes with what goes on, you know?
Yeah, yep. And I've seen, someone with a couple of million dollars worth of their estate and they've got a three-page will. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, things can be challenged and all sorts of stuff like that. So,
yeah. I mean, there's a lot of these single-page wills going around nowadays. Is that like, that sounds concerning to me.
Yeah, I guess it all comes down to what the needs of the person is. And if you're a business owner, you've got companies and trusts or kids, I mean, you know, we can add things like testamentary trusts in the key is making sure wherever your wealth is, you've got the documents in place to transition that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our estate planning packs for a husband and a wife are hundreds of pages, not just one.
Yeah.
By the time you get through all of the documentation.
Yeah, great. And what's after legacy?
Next one there is long-term wealth. So again, we haven't even talked about investing a cent yet. These are all the structures you need in place. Last one there is to do with superannuation. So super is one of the most tax-effective vehicles in Australia for investing. It has a tax rate of 15% when you're building your balance, or 0% when you're drawing on your pension balance or drawing a pension in later in life. And
0% sounds good.
0% tax is fantastic. And there's certain conditions around that, limits and all that stuff, but it's still very, very good compared to 30% or more outside of super. So the goal there is to just have some consideration for it, your whole super strategy. Make sure you have one, you know what it's invested into, and you know you've worked with someone to work out whether you need to, you know, contribute to that fund or that long-term strategy. So yep, that's the structures you need in place.
Yeah.
Layer three.
Love some layers.
Yeah, so we've got foundations.
We're going deep. Here we go.
Now this is, yeah, so layer one's foundations, two is structures, three is actually growing your wealth. So, you know, step 7 of 9 is making wise investment decisions. Now, I'm not a financial advisor, so, you know, I can't really say from a legal perspective anyway, but hey, invest in BHP or, you know, invest in that index fund, or, you know, like make recommendations on, yeah, on exactly
where to put your money.
Yeah, that's it. But I can say it makes total sense to start investing regularly and as early as you can. Usually I sort of share a bit of a diagram on compounding interest. So I think the example is, and I might even have the reference in this good old workbook. But yeah, like just two examples. We've got in this example, it says Aaron starts saving at 20 years old, he puts $2,000 a year aside for 10 years. So his total investment is $20,000. By the time he's 65, that $20,000 has turned into about $500,000 if it earns 8% a year.
Mm.
Compare that to Carl. So Carl begins saving at 40, not 20. He saves $2,000 a year for 25 years. So he puts away $50,000 in total instead of the 20 that Aaron did. When Carl's 65, his is worth less than $200,000. So it is a massive difference, even though he saved more dollars up front.
Mm-hmm. And this is a silly question, but who was the first guy? Aaron?
Yeah,
Aaron. Good old Aaron. Yep. Is he so he's just buying the same stock or the same wherever he's investing it in, he's just buying another $2,000 worth or investing another $2,000 each year?
Yep, just for 10 years though.
And leaving the rest in there, is not selling it or anything. It's just...
That's right. Yep. So, and that's a compounding interest of 8% a year.
Yeah.
Which,
if he finds somewhere where he can get 8% a year.
Yeah. Yep. That's
which it. Could be property. It couldn't be property because you can't keep just investing, buying in that, right?
Yeah. That's a bit hard to.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So it'd be some sort of stock or an investment fund or something like that.
Yeah. Yep. And if you look at the history of the ASX, 8%. History of ASX over like 100 years, the average return's like more than 8%. So, yeah, and that's not terribly difficult to put $2,000 away for, you know, 10 years. It just shows that, you know, you start at 40 or you start at 20 years old, and that's the massive difference it has.
Yeah, I actually find that really interesting, you know, when you talk to people about people who are in like stockbrokers and things, and I have quite a few friends in that industry, and they're always, oh, you know, it's not a great time to be getting in and whatever. And for me, it's like, yeah, but I'm talking over like a few decades here, guys.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not trying to make a win in the next 6 months.
Yep.
So far as I'm concerned, over 2 decades, 3 decades, it's always a great time.
Yes.
To get started, right?
It is, yeah. And that's another good point as well. Like, it's not a get rich quick scheme. You know, you got to start and be consistent about it. And, you know, if I was Aaron, you'd probably keep investing $2,000 a year until you are 65.
Would you say that's an overall theme with building wealth, the consistency? You know, you talked about having Uber just once a night, not 3 times a night.
Yes.
and how, you know, you might save $70 a week.
Yes.
You know, over a year, yeah, it's a decent amount of money. But over 10 years, if you kick that habit, yeah, it's a significant amount of money, right?
It's a house deposit. It's an investment property deposit, yeah.
Yeah.
Like the example I give is Stevie, my wife, and I, we had two coffees a day at this stage in our lives, and we'd always get cafe coffee. We didn't make it at home. Can't stand instant. And so we were spending, you know, $18 a day, 365 days of the year. That's about $6,500 a year. We got a coffee machine because I traded in some points, some credit card points. Mm. You know, spent about $1,000 on coffee beans in a year. So there's $5,500 of savings a year for no change in lifestyle. $5,500 times your decade and your 10 years, that is a house deposit. That's $50,000. That's 55 rather.
On coffee.
Just on coffee. So yeah, you add more layers to that and huge outcome.
Yeah, big time. So what are point 8 and point 9? And then we might go back and delve a little bit deeper into each of these areas.
Yeah. So 8 and 9 are actually a lot to do with property. So step 8 is actually your property portfolio, and step 9 is leveraging debt. So making sure you've got a great a debt strategy in place. So the first one there is your property portfolio. I mean, a lot of Australians love property for great reason, and a few of the reasons I love it is, you know, most of the time, especially with interest rates so low, you can get a cash flow positive property. So that's a great outcome if you get the right one. And, you know, other things I look for is if there's government spend committed to the area, that means public money's going there to build infrastructure, roads, all that sort of thing. So you would expect, you know, private money and value to increase in that area. Banks will easily lend to it. So, yeah, I mean, if you think of like a $500,000 property, you might only need $50,000 or $100,000 deposit on that, depending on your lending circumstances. And, you know, without going too deep into property, you can actually make, you know, 10% or 20% is a very high end on the actual money you invest if you calculate not the rental yield on the property, but the net return on your own investment, which is often a very different number. So
in some ways, to me, that is a more, like, it would make sense that that would always be the number that we're trying to calculate, right? Because
yes,
it's a ROI.
Yeah.
That's what we want. We want to know what return we're going to get on the money that we're putting in.
Yeah, absolutely. But too often I see people focus on the rental yield, and that's important. That gives context to a lot of other stuff, but it's not the yield on the total value of the property I want to know. It's the yield on what money I'm putting into the property. Mm. So, yeah. And often the differences are, it's like two or three times the return on your own money than the property value itself.
Mm. It gives you more context too, because then you can say, okay, well, I've invested $200,000 and I'm getting back, I don't know, 8, 10, 12%, for example. What if I invest that money elsewhere?
That's it, yep.
What would I be getting? You can compare apples with apples.
Yes, yeah. It allows you to do that, and you can say, well, if I put that into a managed fund instead, the $200,000, I might only get 10%, but property gives me 12. Mm. And what we want to be doing as well is working out what's your return with a property on from just a cash flow perspective, not on a speculative, what's the word, capital growth, because that's never guaranteed. I mean, we're seeing a lot at the moment, property prices go through the roof. It's a time where that's a fantastic outcome for people who own property, and prices have increased, but I never want to have in my own property strategy reliance on a property going up in value. Mm. So, yeah, you want to be relying on that rental income, ideally cash flow positive, and yeah, that's some great money to be made.
And then there's the tax benefits to that.
Huge, well. Yeah. Yep. And so again, you get the right property. It's cash flow positive. It puts tax back in your pocket, doesn't cost you anything. And if you look at the, you know, wealthiest 100 families, I haven't actually done this exercise, but I've heard, you know, the old grapevine, but you know, you've got 95% or more, like huge majority. Property is a huge part of their portfolio. So they must be doing something right? Financial perspective anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, cool. Okay. And then the debt strategy at the end, maybe we can talk a little bit about that toward the end perhaps.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of property related, but
okay.
You want to have your debt structured on, let's say, your own home. It doesn't often earn you any money. So what you want to do is make sure that you pay that off as quickly as possible. And so you're focusing your repayments or when you clear debt, you want to focus on non-tax deductible debt because that there's no tax benefit on that. while, you know, not making the focus to get rid of tax deductible debt. So there's a simple strategy that, you know, good financial planners use, which is debt recycling, and it's just prioritizing that non-deductible debt.
Okay.
Yeah, complex in itself, but the idea is simple.
Yeah. So okay, yeah, let's come back to that because I want to jump right back to the start and talk a bit more about that vision. What are the sort of questions that you're asking people when we put everything that we spoke about aside and we say, okay, maybe you've got a business or maybe you're working as a professional and, you know, like what's the end game? You know, what do you want to get out of all this? What do you want your money to be doing for you? What are the kind of questions that you are talking to clients about and how do you help them unpack what their vision is for their financial future?
Yeah. So the framework we use is a bucket list and it sort of divides people's lives on an A3 paper with the sort of business or career, personal like themselves, family, and then contribution. And then we give frameworks around, well, what do you want to achieve in the next year in each of those things or 1 to 5 years, 5 to 10 or 25 years plus. So, you know, that's the kind of guidelines we give. But I really want to know, like, how many hours do you want to work in a week? And, you know, it's interesting to hear the responses from that. And you can easily tell whether someone loves what they do or not.
How can you tell?
Oh, when you get answers, oh, I love what I do. But, you know, 4 days a week is a great outcome, not the 60 hours a week I'm currently doing. Mm. Or, you know, you might hear, oh, I don't want to be doing this. I want to have sold it and retired and not doing much. And it's interesting when you ask them to explore what that looks like.
Right.
And then something else, another passion might pop up. So, yeah.
That's a really interesting point. Over the last couple of years, I've had some good business success and I've had friends come to me and say, you know, I want to learn a bit more about what you do and how you kind of do it. And the first thing I ask them is like, well, what do you want to do? Mm. And they, I don't know. I think I know or they'll know exactly, but they're not doing that at all. And it's like, well, we're only going to have this conversation if we're going to talk about you doing the thing that you love.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, again, what are we doing it all for?
Yeah.
The reason I wanted to share that is just because so often in times we end up doing things that we don't particularly enjoy and then all of a sudden we're in our 50s and we go, oh, I wish I'd given that a crack, you know, and that's a really important message for me to put out for anyone.
Yeah.
Because the life's freaking short, man.
It is.
It breaks my heart when you hear those things happen. But when people are following their passions, you can see it, man. You can feel it in them. You know, they're just like, they're just doing it. They're getting it done. And I love that.
Mm, yeah. And, you know, I love what I do. But, and, you know, some days are tough. Some days you don't love.
Mm.
But, if you're loving what you do, then you won't feel the need to have to retire. It's, you know, it's something that you enjoy doing. And, yeah, love talking about that stuff.
Yeah. And I when people ask me, what have you been up to today? And my default answer is still, I've been working, but I actually don't like the word work because I think for most people there's connotations around, work, like doing the slog, like doing that thing, you know, getting ready for the weekend when I can finally do what I want to do. And for me, that's not what it means. For me, what have you been doing today? It was like, I've been creating wealth. I've been helping people with their health. You know, I've been having a good time. But still, I notice myself saying, I've been working. And it's like, well, I haven't really. I've been doing what I love and doing what I enjoy.
Yeah. Yep.
Certainly sometimes though, yes, there are things that it does feel like work because there's certainly things you don't want to do.
Yeah. Yep. No, it's definitely a bit weird to not acknowledge that bit, but yeah.
Yeah. And so once they kind of unpack that a little bit more and they write their bucket lists out, are there certain things that you're looking for, like certain specifics when it comes to creating wealth and those kind of things? Like are you looking for retirement plans, for example, if they're in their 40s or 50s or you're starting to piece together how you're going to make that happen with their current situation?
Yeah. So, I guess the lens that I look through with their goals is how do we fund this? So, yeah, whether it's property purchases or lifestyles, do they have a 200 grand a year goal for their lifestyle in retirement? Okay, let's work out how much we need in investments, earning what percent to equal 200 grand a year without reducing each year. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of calculations we can do through steps two and three, really. Mm-hmm. Steps two is funding your lifestyle. Step three is how much would you need in investments to fund it?
Right.
Yeah.
And are you also looking at things like super as well, what they have available in super and what they'll need? I guess it comes to step two, like what does it cost for them to live?
Yep.
Yeah, how do you kind of do the calculations based on all those things?
The actual calculation is, let's say it is 200 grand that they want to live on in retirement or at least to work towards, to not have to work again. Then we take
200 per year.
Per year, yeah. Yep. So we take 200 grand, divide that by whatever they think their investment risk tolerance can take. So some people, I've got clients that just want everything in cash. Unfortunately, right now you're pretty much going backwards with inflation.
Yep.
But so be it. But let's say we say a client's happy taking moderate risk to get that 8% return that we talked about earlier with, I think it was Aaron and Carl.
Yeah.
So we take 200 grand and divide that by 0.08 for 8%. And if we've got a calculator here, just to give this example.
And when you're saying 200 grand, you're saying that's what this person said they're going to spend per year to live.
Yes. Yeah. Where it's like food on the table, travel. Mm-hmm. We kind of assume that the mortgage is paid off at that point.
Yeah.
But that's 2.5 million assets earning 8% a year to cover that person's lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, yeah. And if we say 2.5 and the person's already got 500,000 super, then that's only a $2 million gap. Mm-hmm. But they might have investment properties or share portfolio. Mm-hmm. And often people are surprised at that number. Usually it's lower than what they expected. And they also are surprised at how far along some of them are getting to that point. So. Mm.
And does that work come after the living within your means piece, whereby you say, okay, well, what can you actually scale back?
Yes.
Where necessary.
Yeah, that's it. And we always want to have a buffer in there. We don't want to live like we're feeling the need to be scarce in what we spend, but obviously we don't want to go too far into just wasting cash. So, it's quite a fine balance.
Yeah. Get rid of those coffees and the Stan subscription and the Netflix and the Hulu and the this and
Disney
that.
Plus and binge.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazon Prime.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Waste your money, streamingservice.com. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's really cool. It sounds to me like then you're often optimistic that people can actually retire living the way that they want to live most of the time.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, that's my own personal journey that I'm on. Mm. And, I love sort of walking our clients through this stuff because often, they're kind of doing what they do day in, day out without that overarching plan. So, you might have, thinking of a client who's a dentist, he goes to work, earns a decent living, but does he have something in place that he knows, all right, when I hit $2.5 million in investments, that's when I know that, cool, I can provide for 200 grand living. And maybe at that point he might drop from, 4 days a week down to two, or it just gives him that choice or that little bit more certainty of having a plan in place to be able to match that to a desired lifestyle. And that's what I actually think it all comes back to. I've made some questionable financial decisions, but the paramount is lifestyle. Mm. So, is life really just trying to stack up dollars and that's it? Like, what's the point to that? So, that lifestyle is the key.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Yeah, I mean, it's not the true reason why we're doing everything that we're doing, but I think it needs to be an important piece. Just the last couple of weeks, we've been lucky. We've been in Brisbane and Sunny Coast and, oh God, I just feel for everyone in Melbourne and Sydney and pretty much everywhere in Australia at the moment going through what they're going through. And And I actually felt guilt on the weekend, Ben, because we went down to Currumbin Valley. We had a nice retreat overnight. And I called my mum and sitting on the beach and she's down there in the freezing cold in lockdown, really busy. And I felt guilt and I thought, well, you know what? Like, no, like I made choices to come and live here and to live this lifestyle, and maybe it's a bit of luck that we didn't get locked down
at that point.
But the fact is that it's the middle of winter and I'm sitting in the sunshine on the beach. For me it's all a lifestyle decision to come up here and do that. And a lot of what we've been doing in our business, and one of my driving factors in the business, is A, I want to get people who are better at doing their job than I am. But B, because I want to be able to live the lifestyle that supports my health as best as possible. And being up here in the sunshine and in the warmth with good quality fruits and near the ocean and around nature, like all that stuff's important to me. Now, has that perhaps impacted other areas of my life that wouldn't have been impacted if I'd stayed in Melbourne? Yeah, absolutely it has. But it's the number one priority for me. And I think our lifestyle needs to be our priority, because it's not just about stacking up dollars, you know, or whatever it is. I think the way that we actually spend our time is the most important thing. As we were talking about off air prior, I talk about this in health all the time. Like any challenges that we have in our health or in any area of our life it's an expression of how we've been spending our life up until that point and the choices we've been making. So if we want to experience different things moving forward, we need to make different choices and spend our time doing things differently. And that's why I think it's so important. And I really resonate with what you're saying about lifestyle, because ultimately that's what it comes down to. And we all have our different flavors of lifestyle and what we enjoy. But knowing that and owning that, I think is really, really important. And it shapes a lot of what we've been talking about today.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, it's really cool. Really, really cool. So, okay, we've got the vision. We're living within our means and we're kind of clear on what we need to be financially free. That already feels like a place that most people haven't even gotten to or even reached. It's kind of freeing.
Yeah, and we can, you know, I do that in a workshop with people in about an hour and a half, and that's like to get to that point. Step three takes half the workshop, and then steps, four onwards is the other half. But yeah, you've got to nail that foundational stuff, and we can do that from, you know, we've got tools and things that make that easy to work out. So yeah, it's almost like you share ideas that people haven't heard of, and they go, "Why is it so simple?" Well, it is actually that simple. You just got to do it and start, and
Yeah, a lot of the time people just don't spend time thinking about this stuff.
That's it.
They're too busy doing something else, you know, something more important, in inverted commas. Are there any other important pieces where we should talk about when we talk about foundation before we move on to structures?
I think a lot of it's going through the process, and I also have questions from people around, well, you know, when we get caught up in the detail of it, oh, what about tax in retirement and do we need 2.75 mil or 2.5? And so just in a way, like stop making it super complex. I'd rather you aim at 2.5 because you've done a back-of-the-napkin calculation than get too caught up in working out exactly that, because, I mean, who knows what's going to happen in 5 years. Is 8% a return reality then? Yeah, all that sort of stuff, but at least it's something to work towards. So yeah, the idea there is don't overcomplicate it. And I feel this is more relevant to the later steps, is you've just got to go through the process. A lot of people see the, you know, they might have an initial phone call with the, you know, insurance advisor, and it all seems too hard to go through the process. Just take one step after another, have someone holding your hand through the process to get it done, but make sure you actually get it done. These are, in a way, basic things to have sorted. And, you know, sometimes I get a bit passionate about it in the workshops, but I actually think it's selfish not to do this. So if you don't have insurances in place or an estate plan in place, that's super selfish for the people that you say that you love, who will need to deal with this if you don't deal with it. And it will often be extremely messy and, yeah, So better to be proactive about it and get it done.
Yeah, it's a really valid point because a lot of the time this work feels like you're jumping through hoops.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I got a, more paperwork. Oh, I got to sign another thing. Another DocuSign? Wait, you told me I could do it online. Now I need to go in and do it in person.
I got to get it witnessed by a JP.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, now I got to find a JP. And like, I've just witnessed that so many times. Whereas if we have that, just that mindset shift of like, well, yeah, okay, cool. It's going to be probably going to be more painful than what I think it is. And that's all right.
Yep.
Let's just keep on keeping on and just move through the process and get it done.
Yeah, definitely. And that's where I see a lot of people fall off and not get this stuff done is just too hard, deal with it later and end up not doing this.
Yeah, that's right. And then something happens and oh.
Yep.
Shit.
I wish I had that in place.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, where's that sign thing? Oh, I didn't sign it. Oh, I didn't scan it back to him. Oh, the scanner wasn't working. That's right. And then we had to go to Officeworks and they didn't have any in stock. And
then it's someone else's fault.
Yeah, exactly. all the brain trash comes up.
That's it.
Cool. All right. Well, let's segue then right into insurances. You kind of touched on it then. So now we're talking about structures. What are the questions that we need to be asking and what sort of decisions do we need to be making there?
Yeah, so I always recommend using an insurance broker or advisor and there's kind of two types. There's a general insurer or general insurance brokers and then there's life insurance. They're usually financial planners but they know based on your circumstances which insurers give the better outcome for you. Rather than you going straight to an insurer, you're going to pay nothing different in terms of prices in most cases, is my understanding, on using a broker or going direct. That's. But what you do get, hopefully, is advice along the way, and that's what you need to look for. Questions to ask is how much should I be covered for if I was to pass away? What about my income protection? If you're self-employed, so a lot of our clients run their own businesses, that's more complex to explain, but also to work out how much to be covered for as well. Mm-hmm. And then, it might be sort of personal preference on other things like trauma insurance or illness insurance, they call it, whether you want to be covered for that as well.
And like TPD and...
That's it, not quite dead, but almost.
Yeah, that's right. And then you can also get like insurances around chronic diseases like Alzheimer's and those kind of things. I can't remember what that falls under, but
I think it's some of them call it trauma, some of them critical illness, I think. Oh, Alzheimer's might be TPD. I have no idea. I don't know enough about it apart from I've worked out how much cover I think I need for life.
Yeah.
I've got my little formula there, but all the other stuff is that's someone else's kettle of fish.
As a side note, without me getting on the pedestal, the best insurance for Alzheimer's is to just look after your health so you don't get it. But anyway, that's another podcast for another day. Okay, cool. And being clear on exactly like the cover as well. I mean, can you insure yourself for when you die for whatever amount you want?
I think there's some limitations to that. Like I don't think you can pick like 20 mil without having some sort of thought process behind it or some insurers might have maximums of certain amounts. So, I don't quite know the answer to that. But if it's kind of within, if it's going to pay out debt, provide for a decent lifestyle, I don't think you're going to hit many hurdles unless you've already had illnesses and then they consider you high risk for certain things. So,
Yeah,
that can be a bit tricky.
Yeah. And when you say it's going to pay out debt and pay for your lifestyle, again, pay for your lifestyle for how many years?
Yeah.
Like a couple of years?
No, I think you'd want it kind of, well, my calculation for our life insurance if I was to pass away basically sets up Stevie and our kids for life so they won't have to work again.
Right.
That's the kind of maths I've used.
I saw Stevie looking at you earlier and I could see her just thinking, oh, maybe it's about time we get him sorted.
It's always a risk, isn't it?
No, that's a beautiful thing and I like what you said earlier about it being selfish, not having those things sorted.
It's right?
Because then they're in the lurch.
Absolutely. You've left them with massive problems. Not only are you gone, then they can't put anything – or they have to draw on your family – external family's resources to provide for them. None of that situation's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we talked about wills and power of attorney. Again, is that just find a solicitor or get a recommendation from someone and get a proper will written, what does that will need to cover and what are the things that I need to make sure are in there?
Yeah. So the key thing I always say is an estate plan is not just a will. So it's not one single document. I think most of the ones we put in place is maybe 4 documents per person. So, and again, our client base is business owners. So things like the will, the power of attorney, memorandum of directions, got a funny name, and they may or may not, testamentary trust, but that's sort of built into the will itself. So they're kind of the key documents I look for. And again, yeah, your solicitor is key there. If they produce a 3-page document for you, just walk away. That would be what I would do anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's hard to find good, consistent professionals, but they are out there.
Yeah, we actually walked away from a solicitor because he was looking at our current wills, or for my parents, and he's like, oh, we can condense this right down to like a couple pages. And I was just like, alarm bells.
Yeah, alarm bells, yep. And, you know, there might be overkill, but if you work off the basis of you rather have the clause or the thing in there and not need it than need it and not have it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we spoke about putting that in, but we decided it wasn't going to be any good.
Oh, we actually needed that now.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, damn.
You can't get the person to come back to life to sign it.
Yeah. Yeah, I find power of attorney is a particularly interesting thing to consider, like if they're not done right or in time.
Yes.
And then it's like, damn it.
Yep.
Yeah. This is going to be a pain for the next 2.5 years whilst we try and sort this out.
Yeah. Yep. It can be quite frustrating.
And then the last part you had in structures was around super, I think, and long-term wealth.
Yep. Yeah. So things we want there is, you know, what's the best superannuation vehicle for you? Is it industry super or like a Australian super, like one of those big super providers, or is a self-managed super fund more appropriate for you? So we often see that where business owners want to buy their own commercial premises. It is actually quite a good transition to be your own landlord and to be building an asset that your business rents itself rather than paying rent to some other third party, using your superannuation to do that. So that's one consideration. If you want more control over super as well, we see an SMSF as a great option, and also property development. So that can also be, funding is often the hardest part of property development, and with the right structures in place, you can use your superannuation in an SMSF. Again, right structures in place to help you fund other projects outside of super.
Yeah,
so it's pretty powerful stuff. And yeah, I was lucky enough to have exposure to that right back when I started in accounting. It seems like a lifetime ago, probably 2007 was when I kicked off with that stuff. So yeah, and SMSFs were one of those specialty things that not many people saw.
Yeah, when did they kind of came in vogue around like 2010 or something, right?
It's kind of picked up and up as the years have gone on, but like my grandfather had one back in like late 80s, early 90s. Wow. Like, yeah, it was done a little bit differently back then, but that's kind of where I've seen the earliest stuff around it.
Yeah. And are they still like, is any legislation changing and making them less effective at the moment or more effective?
Yeah, I guess what they've done, and this is since I've been working in accounting, is they've dropped the benefits slowly over time. So the way they do that a lot is they limit how much you can put into super. Again, if we think that more money in super is taxed at a lower rate, that's one way for them to limit that tax benefit to you is to stop how much gets in there.
Right.
Or just turn it down. So I remember early in my career, there was 1 year you could put $1 million as a tax deduction into super. Huge.
Wow.
Huge amounts. And now that same limit is $27,500.
Like yeah.
A fraction.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's one way. They've also, forever, it used to be 0% tax in pension mode, regardless of your balance. And I saw a report the other day where the top 5 super funds or the top super fund had over half a billion dollars in super. You know, 10 years ago, when there was no limit on that 0% tax in pension mode, you would have had this Cayman Islands super fund just growing without tax, which is awesome. Now they've made the limit $1.7 million or so. So the first $1.7 million you have in super in pension is tax-free. After that point, you pay your 15% tax.
Right. So okay.
That's another one they put in. But, yeah, just small tweaks that they've done along the way. But I still say it's one of the, you know, 15% tax is better than 30.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not all out the door. And it is still, like, when you know how to use them properly, and I'm not trying to push the line or be grey or step over the line, so to speak, but you use them within their rules, they are still so powerful, self-managed super funds. Mm.
And is there, you talk about when they're in retirement, what are the actual guidelines around when you can switch it into retirement phase and start to utilise that benefit?
Yeah, so the current rules are you have to be over 60 years old and have ceased, they call it gainful employment, basically quit your job, or 65 years old and you don't have to have quit.
Okay.
So they're kind of the two different conditions. There's other layers to it, and if you're terminally ill, you can usually get some out, but it's not 0% taxed. Mm. But, yeah, they're the two main ones, is 60 and retired or 65 full stop.
See, there are benefits to being older.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. often I'm high-fiving clients when they turn 60 and they're like, what? And it's like, hey, that's fantastic. Go quit your job.
Yeah, immediately.
Yeah, basically.
People are always saying to me, wow, Alex, like you're looking younger. All these fasts and things you're doing, you're looking really young. And it's like, yeah, but you're 65. You get no tax. You don't have to pay any tax on it.
Yep.
If you have an SMSF and it's in pension phase.
Like, that's it. Done all that paperwork stuff.
That's funny. Well, we've got our foundations down. We've got some structures in place.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, this can take months to have done all this, right? I mean, the foundation work you can do, I guess, you know, a few hours or even think about over a few days. The structure stuff can take some time.
And you'll have back and forth. Like insurances can be a process. You might need medical checks and estate planning is usually a good month. Superannuation, yeah. It all can take a while.
However, at this point, I'm feeling like there's some stability.
Yes.
And just kind of an understanding of like where I'm at or whoever's going through this process of like, okay, like I've kind of got a bit of a handle on my financial situation or my overall wealth situation, which is exciting.
Yes.
Yeah. So then we move onto growth. We talked about compound interest a little bit earlier and wise investments. Is there any more that you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I just encourage people, if you haven't already, to start. You know, if I wasn't clear enough with good old Aaron and Carl before, you know, and just, again, just keep it simple. And without saying to invest in this or that, but like explore index funds, because that like an investment in an index fund means they've also bought multiple businesses or shares in multiple businesses. So you kind of spread your risk in from that perspective.
It's kind of diversified.
Yeah. Yep. Not all eggs in one basket, so to speak. And usually clients have a preference of call it property or shares or both. Some won't touch shares, some won't touch property. Mm-hmm. So I kind of, you know, my guideline there is do what works for you, but just do something. I don't understand the mindset of leaving money in cash at all of it, because it's just going nowhere.
Well, it's a fear mindset, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. You're going to lose it. Are you? I don't know. Has the market dropped? Yes. Can you predict that? Probably not. But has it been better off in, let's say, shares for the last 100 years? Yes. Mm. So all that sort of stuff. And again, what I found working more and more with clients in this stuff is often logic can go out the window when things get emotional or we've had past experiences that have been bad. Mm. Like people have lost money on shares. Oh, I'm not touching a share again, or I made a bad property decision 20 years ago, not touching property. And that can often massively limit a client's potential. So, yeah.
I feel like with those things, it's like anything in life. Let me give an example. In business, we had to put our prices up recently at iHealth because the cost of timber
yeah.
and metal around the world is going through the roof.
Didn't even think. I've heard construction's in a bad place, but
yeah, saunas are the same.
Are too. Wow.
Yeah, and so we had to put our prices up, and it was I never liked doing that. You know, I want to be able to give our product at a price that is affordable for people, that they get a really high quality product and blah, blah, blah. But we had to. And so there was a bit of head trash around doing that for me. And then just one morning it clicked. I was like, Alex, put the prices up and then test and measure.
Yep.
And if you need to adjust the prices, you can adjust the prices. And you might get it wrong and you might get it right and see how you go. Mm. And it's just that idea of like just trying and it might not work. So then you just adjust it,
yep.
You know, like implement something, test and measure, and then change and test and measure and change and test and measure. And although perhaps the consequences may feel like they're more for someone who's buying a property or putting 50 grand into a stock, it's a similar kind of thing. Like to get good at it, you're probably not going to nail it the first time.
Yep.
So then do it, test and measure and change and adjust your approach and then do it again. Mm. And over time, you'll get better at it and you'll make better property decisions and you'll make better stock decisions.
Absolutely.
And then all of a sudden it starts working for you.
Yeah.
You know, yep. Like you don't just buy the best property of your life in the first one or make the best stock decision. I'm so glad I bought them at a dollar. Now they're 10 bucks. That's going to happen every time.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, so I think having that mindset around investments is important because you probably won't nail it the first time.
Absolutely. And I remember we built our first house it was a nice looking house in a poor choice of location, and it ended up being worth, by the time we built it, ended up being worth less than what we paid for it. So an awful, awful decision. But, you know, I could have gone, nah, not touching property again. Or I go, hang on, I learned a heap. I learned the process of building. I learned valuation process and how that works now. Mm-hmm. Jeez. I now know location is so important. Like there's so many lessons out of a poor decision. So
Exactly. I mean, everything happens for a reason. We're talking about that before the call too.
That's it.
And everything in life is a gift if we choose to see it like that.
Yep.
And it is a choice. I made that property investment. It was a bit of a shit one. So what are all the learnings from that? You know, there are plenty of learnings in all these things that go wrong in our life. If we choose to see him like that,
that's it.
We can play the victim card and let's not even go there. So, okay, that's great. So we're making some investments and then you talked a bit about property and starting that property portfolio and getting into that. How does that differ from a wise investment? Or here we're saying investments are like an index fund and then property is property.
No, I think investment is kind of – what works for you, which can be property and or shares and managed funds.
Yeah.
But the property on its own is sort of reiterating that it's part of the wealthiest families in Australia.
Mm.
It's a massive part of their
portfolio.
And, you know, some benefits I list out in the workshop I run is, you know, massive tax benefits through depreciation, negative gearing. So it's one of the only investments that if you make a tax loss on, which is often an on paper loss, hopefully, not a cash loss, but you make a negative gearing loss through depreciation, then you can actually take that off your tax bill. So you can't do that with certain other investments alone. Your own property, your own home, if you make a gain on that, it's tax-free. There's no tax-free share sales. If you make a gain on them, you can touch and feel it. It's less exposed to stock market volatility. So, you know, if you have a look at what happened with share prices when not GFC, what's the most recent one? The COVID.
COVID.
Yeah, that's
that
it.
That old thing.
Yep. Yeah, yep. So you see a massive dip in the share market. You know, the property market didn't crap itself that much, but what you've seen since is it's just gone through the roof. So, it's another way of diversifying as well, away from shares that's not cash. So, yeah, it has a lot of benefits and, again, when you look at top 100 families or our highest value clients here, it's, you know, they've probably got multiple properties. And they may not be the best properties in the world, but they have it as part of their strategy and consistently putting focus to it.
Mm. Yeah, I something you touched on there made me think about something you said earlier, like don't get caught in the nitty gritty of, you know, we're talking about, oh, do you need $2.5 million worth of investments, or do you need 2.75 or whatever it is? It's like, don't get stuck in that. And for me, I've kind of approached investments like that too. It's like, it might not be a perfect property, but I want to have some of that. And it might not be the perfect stock, but I feel like I want to have some of those too.
Yeah.
So then you kind of diversified, and you just have a lot of things going for you.
Yep.
As opposed to being like, oh, I'm going to wait until I find the perfect property, and it ticks all these boxes. And then you may miss out, or you just may not get to that kind of end result of being quite diversified.
Yeah, yep. And I did see, even over the last 12 months, before the property market really took off, we had a couple of clients considering buying certain properties, but they did hold off, not knowing what was going to happen. Mm. And, you know, you ask them now and they're kicking themselves.
Yeah.
I could have bought two and I missed them. So. Yes, ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Okay, cool. And let's just talk about the debt strategy just in a little bit more detail.
Yep.
Just for a couple minutes.
Yeah.
So how does that work? Debt recycling in general.
Yeah, so I touched on it before, but the goal is to massively decrease your non-tax deductible debt, because it's got no tax benefit to you, and often non-tax deductible debt means whatever you've bought, whether it's like a car or a home or a boat, isn't actually earning you anything. So it's just basically costing you cash.
And when you say a home, you mean the home that you're living in?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yep. So not an investment property. So it basically brings focus to getting rid of what a lot of people call bad debt, which is that non-deductible debt, while you, I wouldn't say maximize tax-deductible debt, but definitely don't prioritize it.
Yeah.
So, and then there's ways you can set up your purchase of investment properties so that, you know, the income gets paid into your own home loan to kill that faster. Yeah.
So you could have multiple investment properties that you're renting out to other people, and the income from those rentals is going straight onto your personal place of residence.
Yep.
To pay that down quickly.
That's right. So an example of, let's say you're paying 30 grand a year off your home loan, but your investment property was earning 20 grand in rent. Putting that 20 grand on top of your 30, so now you've got 50K going in a year. Mm. But again, you stack that with two or three properties. Mm. You start, you know, if you've got 200 grand left on your own home's mortgage and 50 grand a year going into it, again, just back of the napkin stuff, you've paid your home loan off in 4 years.
Mm. And those investment properties are really just staying as interest-only loans at the time.
That's right.
You can pay your property down, and then I guess you could do the same strategy with those investment properties eventually.
Yeah. Yep. Like, so once you cleared your house, if you've got three investment properties, then focusing on number one first, and then getting rid of that number two and number three. Yeah. I mean, or you could just buy more investment properties.
Yeah. I imagine that could get a bit fun.
Yeah. Yep. Let's have one for every day of the week.
Yeah. And again, I think the important piece here is that it's all over time, right?
Like, yes.
You don't have to do all this in the next 12 months.
Yeah. Yep. That's it. And patience is key. And even timing, like, you know, sharing personal experience, we tried to sell our first home 18 months ago. So pre-COVID and all that sort of crap. And we had it listed for way less than what we bought it for, dropped it 10, 20, 30 grand, still didn't get any bites on it. So we ended up taking it off the market and renting it. And now we ended up not only making that back in a recent sale, but we get our money back plus some as well, with no tax, because we lived in it. So, it kind of – timing is also pretty important, where I thought we'd made a massive loss on it. It turns out, and we didn't make heaps on it, but we got what we paid for it back.
That helps.
Yeah. Kind of out of nowhere. So everything happens for a reason, right?
Yeah, that's it. Is the caveat there, though, timing is important, but when it comes to investments, getting started is also
very important.
Very important.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, it might sound silly to buy at the top of the market, or when you think it's the top. But yeah, I think it's a worse decision because what you're also doing there is taking a pretty short-term view. Mm. Yes, the market might drop, but what we see with cycles is it does pick up again. And so if you think you're buying at the top of the market and that it will never exceed what you buy it at, that's probably not the right lens to look through. Mm. But getting started with a 10, 20-year view, yeah, I think that's a bit more of an appropriate way to look at things.
Yeah, you got to zoom out a bit more.
Yes.
Yeah, really good point. Mm. I feel like we've covered a lot.
Yeah, yep.
Like there's some meaty stuff there.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that's what we cover in a workshop with our clients together in sort of 3 hours. We do some, you know, exercises and get our workbooks out, but
yeah,
it is a lot of content to to cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I've gone through my own journey with this stuff and it works.
Yeah, I think it's so important to just have a handle on these things.
Yeah.
And really just know some of these answers. Like, it just helps you sleep a bit better at night.
Yes.
Yeah. I reckon. Which at the end of the day is also pretty important.
Yes.
That's awesome, mate. Do you have anything you want to add to the end of that? Any pieces of Ben wisdom in there that you just want to sprinkle on the top for us at the end of that?
Yeah, I guess maybe an overarching thing is, and the whole reason I've broken it down into those steps is just don't get overwhelmed by it. And, you know, when I started my own journey around wealth creation, the situation was pretty crap. You know, it was the first couple of years of starting Inspire. This was quite a few years ago. I had, you know, relationship was in a bit of an interesting place with me working crazy hours, Stevie at uni full time, and then doing her practical stuff on the side. What else? So, you know, no time, no money, and what we had to do was obviously change something. So we went away for a weekend and started with vision. What do we actually want here? And that's where we put a bit of travel on the bucket list. Some property purchases, actually getting ahead from a financial perspective, and then one step at a time. Over quite a few years to get that sorted, we're in a much better position. So if you are feeling like things are all over the place, that's fine. I've been there. It sucks. But just one foot in front of the other and start with that vision, please.
Beautiful.
Mm.
Love it. If people want to find out more about you or if they want to get in touch and work with Inspire,
yeah,
where can they find you and find you guys?
So probably the best place is our website, inspire.business. So we've got one of those funny
cool
URLs. Yep. Yeah. You know, there's all sorts of resources and webinar recordings, or if you want to reach out to talk with one of our accountants, so there's a link there. So that's the best way to do it.
Beautiful. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Thanks for having me in your podcast room.
Yeah.
It's very nice and comfortable. And yeah, it's been a pleasure having you on, mate.
Mm, thank you. Thanks for going through that with me.
Yeah, awesome. Cheers.
Thank you.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave a review and subscribe to stay up to date with the latest episodes.